Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by conservative Bruno Barron, liberal Georgia Logothetis, and special guest, former White House Chief of Staff Samuel Skinner. Our program tonight coming to you from our new home on the Sirius XM Satellite Studios on Chicago's Great West Side, our brand new home for Beyond the Beltway, each and every Sunday night for both our radio show and our television show. We've got new digs, but the phone lines remain the same, open, toll-free at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. In the next couple of hours, we have lots of politics to discuss, and we're going to be asking the question, should taxpayers bail out the automotive industry? That's the big debate that Congress is going to be picking up this coming week. Big question is this going to be something that this Congress deals with, or are they going to push it off to the new Congress come January? But again, 1-800-723-8289, we want to get your response to that. We'll have some debate and discussion of it as the program unfolds this evening, as well as a variety of other important political issues. But first of all, we have a unique guest this evening. He is the former Chief of Staff to former President George Herbert Walker Bush, Sam Skinner, an old friend of this program. Nice to have you with us on Beyond the Beltway.
Nice to be here in your new location.
The new digs.
Here, right.
It is beautiful.
Remind everybody what channel you're on Sirius XM, by the way.
130.
130.
My question to you is, the pressures of trying to get to the President of the United States with information, you have been that guard that's kept the people away. What advice would you give to new incoming Presidential Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel about his job?
Well, he's been in the White House for a number of years, so I think he's probably pretty familiar with the way the White House works and how the White House Chief of Staff's office works. So I don't think he's going to have a whole lot of problems figuring that out, and I'm not so sure he needs a whole lot of advice from people that have been there before. But I think he is probably going to find out that while he was there in a different role, really the buck stops at his desk, and it stops at the president's desk, and it stops at the Chief of Staff's desk. And you have to tell a lot of people no. And you have to really condense a lot of information to make sure that if it's valuable information, it gets to the president, but you don't bog down the president with a lot of information or a lot of conversations that are unnecessary and extraneous.
Now, obviously, you have people who are on the opposite side, the political partisans on the opposite side. You know that you have to maybe sift through what they want to say to the president, but also your unique position because the White House is filled with people who allegedly support the president, like the president, and yet you have to deal with sort of internal bickering that happens on virtually every staff.
Well, the White House is unique because it's a small office, very few number of people there, and they all are very strong people, type A personalities, and they all want to make sure they're heard. So the Chief of Staff has to balance all those personalities, and that's a special part of the job that people don't really recognize. And it gets out of hand sometimes, but my guess is that Rahm will pretty well control that.
Now to the question of the night, and that is, should the taxpayers through Congress, should they bail out the automobile industry? The Democrats have suggested that they may want to take a portion of the $700 billion bailout, take $25 billion of it, and send it to Detroit to bail out the big three automotive makers. And Bruno Barron, our conservative tonight. Bruno, what's your answer? I think I know the answer, but let's hear it.
Absolutely not. You've got three big businesses here, none of which have been particularly well run. They apparently build decent cars for Europeans and Chinese, but they can't build decent cars that compete here. It's not really a bailout for the – I mean you're bailing out two different groups of people, the executives who have made all these bad decisions and then certainly payback for getting them elected, the union members, both groups of which probably don't deserve a bailout.
Georgia Logothetis is here. She is with the Daily Kos. She is our liberal. Yes. Your answer to the question.
Well, I'd certainly take issue with the contention that a bailout would be payback to the union groups. Obviously, the auto industry is far more than just the union groups. I mean, they are kind of the backbone of the American economy for decades. And what we're seeing right now with the automotive industry is the result of basically failed leadership on the national level in terms of why are American cars not selling as fast as the European cars? Why are they more expensive? You know, and there are certain issues involved in terms of, you know, health care per car and those types of issues. But there hasn't been the leadership on the national level to step in and say, you know, this is kind of the core of American entrepreneurship, and let's figure out how to deal with this.
Speaking of that, Richard Shelby, Republican of Alabama, was on television this morning, and this is what he had to say. Companies fail every day and others take their place. I think this is a road we should not go down. They're not building the right products. They've got good workers, but they don't believe they've got good management. They don't innovate. They're a dinosaur in a sense. Sam Skinner, where do you come down on this?
Well, first of all, we're bailing out a lot of businesses today in this very unique situation that we're in. We've bailed out half a dozen banks. We're bailing out another dozen or two dozen or 50 banks by loaning them money. We bailed out AIG. So we've already begun down the slippery slope, so to speak, that Senator Shelby talks about. I think this is a very tough call because it's a huge industry. A lot of their problems, they've really overcome. They make quality cars now. They can compete on quality with a lot of the manufacturers from abroad. A lot of the manufacturers, foreign manufacturers, now manufacturing in the United States. So we're going to bail out GM, Ford, and Chrysler. We're going to have to bail out Toyota and the others who manufacture in the United States. So yet, on the other hand, the ripple effect in the biggest recession in our lifetime is already upon us. And I think we've got to make sure that if we're really putting money into the system to save the jobs, to keep people working, and to drive the economy again, I think letting a million people stop working, which is what the estimate is will be, is a pretty big decision. So
John,
there are exceptions to the rule. My general rule is let businesses go on their own.
But this is an exception. John Kyle, Republican of Arizona, said on TV today, just giving them $25 billion doesn't change anything. It just puts off for 6 months or so the day of reckoning. Bruno?
I think he's right. There are definitely things regarding policy and leadership out of Washington that might be able to help American industries. But raising all of our taxes or debauching our currency to give make sure that a million people supposedly keep their jobs, it's going to cost jobs on the other end of that. Everybody looks to Chrysler and said, well, the government made money off of the Chrysler bailout. But had Chrysler been allowed to fail, things are not static. They're dynamic.
Well, that was also only a billion.
That was only a billion at the time. But had Chrysler failed back then, we might have two or three new auto companies. People might have done different things with the money. People might have seen that, wait a minute, we're not going to bail somebody out with a government loan. There are qualitative differences between shoring up the finance industry and shoring up manufacturing concerns.
Our phone number is 1-800-723-8289. Barney Frank, Democrat of Massachusetts, he has weighed in on it. We're going to find out what Barney has to say. And also, I've got a new way to maybe deal with the crisis when we come back. 1-800-723-8289. From Chicago, I'm Bruce Dumont.
Relieve One Day Cold Sore Symptom Treatment is out to prove how fast it really works. If you suffer from those nasty sores, try Relieve and find out for yourself if Relieve works really fast for you. Relieve is spelled R-E-L-E-E-V. It's easy to find and is in all major drugstores. So if you get cold sores, remember to get Relieve now and keep it ready to use the moment a cold sore attacks.
Imagine this. You walk into your apartment and, oh boy, you've been robbed. Yep, somebody definitely broke in there and made off with the goods, didn't they? Your flat screen TV, your laptop, and even your race car shaped bed's gone. Just a devastating loss. The good news is, if you call Geico, you could be protected for as little as $12 a month. Yeah, seriously, just $12. So first, call Geico, and second, maybe think about buying a grown-up bed, yeah?
For a fast, easy rate quote on renter's insurance, visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
from Sacramento, California to Boston, Massachusetts. You're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8029. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Speaking of Massachusetts, Barney Frank has weighed in, and this is what he had to say. He, of course, is the chairman of the House Financial Services Committee. The House is ready to do it. There's no downside to trying. Georgia Logothetis, no downsize?
Well, I think that what Barney Frank is getting at is that there's no downside in the sense of if you put $25 billion in, it'll help at least minimally. It may not solve the problem, on a larger scale. Now, politically, is there going to be a downside? Probably. I mean, if you look at the backlash that happened with the first bailout,
isn't the downside basically what Sam referred to? The downside is, when do you say no?
Exactly.
I mean, because why wasn't more done with the airline industry? Why isn't businesses are closing all the time?
Absolutely, and this is why this situation is just so tragic, because you have businesses that are quote unquote too big to fail, and that have become so grossly mismanaged to the point that we can't let them fail. So in essence, we're rewarding the failure of these companies. The problem being, however, as was pointed out by the other panelists, there are millions of jobs at stake. And in a time when everybody's wondering how they're going to put food on their table, living paycheck to paycheck, when they hear, 1 million jobs are at stake, they want action.
Sam Skinner.
Well, we have on occasion bailed out the airline industry and others. After 9/11, we came to the aid of a lot of businesses that really were crippled by the 9/11 incident. So I think there is some precedent here. The real problem is that $25 billion is not going to solve the problem. I was on the board of a major steel company, LTV Steel. We went through bankruptcy once, and then they went through bankruptcy again. And they just couldn't get the business reorganized to compete in the global market. And that's the real challenge that GM, Ford, and Chrysler have, is they've got to get their structure in place to compete. And
so wouldn't bankruptcy be better for them?
We're not going to stop Chrysler from going or GM from going into bankruptcy. I mean, if you think this bill of $25 billion will stop them from going into bankruptcy, you're wrong. If the economy continues through 2009 like it's forecast to do, and auto sales stay at the level that they are, and Chrysler, GM, for example, it's going through about $2 billion a quarter or more, it's going to be another 6 months or 8 months. So you really got to restructure the organization, restructure their labor contracts, and the only way you can do that is by going through bankruptcy.
Now, one thing that happens in real life is that when a company is going through trouble, they reach out to their vendors and they look for, a better credit deal. Hey, can you give me some more time? They try to work with those that are an integral part of their company. My question would be, and this is my idea to throw on the table, and I want to get, response to this. One of the industries that's making out like, I don't want to say bandits, but doing very well is the oil industry. Collectively, the top four, over $100 billion. Why doesn't the oil company bail out Detroit? Why don't they do it?
If they have the money. I mean, I'm sure that there's probably back-channel communications going on. I think what we're seeing – because you see, Bruce, that's a very good idea. The only problem is that it's a intelligent capitalist idea, and you're making that suggestion in a soup of very bad judgment in D.C. and in many corporate boardrooms. And that's my opinion, but I just think that they're messing this up.
Industries have been in cahoots. One has been feeding the other, no pun intended.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You can't run one without the other.
Yeah.
They've been feeding each other. They've been lobbying Congress for umpteen years. I mean, the CAFE standards, all the problems we have now, which have led to, gas guzzlers or bad decisions out of Detroit. I mean, the people that are laughing all the way to the bank are the oil companies. And yet they've got the money. And by the way, it can be a loan. I'm not saying give it to them. Let them earn some interest on it.
There's no business reason to do that for the oil companies. People are going to buy cars. They're just not going to buy GM, Ford, and Chrysler cars. They're going to buy cars from a dozen manufacturers all over the world.
There's not a good business reason to do it. Is there a political reason? Is there a political will? Is there a political pressure that could be built by Congress? If we're talking about looking for new innovative ideas.
I would doubt it. I mean, what you have heard, though, is you know, a windfall profits tax to go towards bailing out the automotive industry. So that's obviously if, you know, if the private parties don't have, you know, America's best interest at heart and sit out down at the table and hammer it out, well, then maybe it's the government's duty to step in and impose such a tax on those kind of obscene profits and bail out the automotive industry that way.
Haven't had one since 1980.
Yeah, well, that's the problem.
It's really not the job of the government to sit there and say what is and what isn't an obscene profit. I look at the money that the oil companies have made, and there's been speculation in the oil industry, and there's been a run-up in demand. Those oil companies, looking at what's happening to oil prices, may not be all flat flush with cash in the next 2 to 3, 4 years. They've certainly been flush with cash. But this is the interesting thing, because we're all sitting here pretending that, well, if we just make this happen, if we just get a commission to fix this, if we just make people do things. That's how we got here, is by pretending that we could print money and have, you know, collateralized debt obligations and credit default swaps. And it was all a bunch of funny money going around the world. And this is how we got in this place. I think that as painful as it might be, probably the best policy is to let the markets, you know, I mean, we still have safety nets. No one's going to starve. Let the markets reassert themselves and see what the answers are.
Well, I would also add to that, however, that we also got here precisely because people did not want the government stepping in to help out with these industries. For example, there were huge pushes towards increasing gas mileage on cars, towards, you know, certain CAFE standards out in California. And the Bush administration refused to let California impose a higher standard. And what we've seen in that sense is that you have the Asian auto industry that has been absolutely leading the way in terms of gas mileage. Why do you think so many people have, you know, bought up a Prius? Because when the oil prices skyrocketed, people went on and bought a Prius. There wasn't really a comparable vehicle on the American side, precisely because the government was not allowed to step in and say, hey, Detroit, you know what? Maybe it's time you make more fuel-efficient cars. Maybe it's time you look more into hybrids. There has been progress on that front, but it certainly hasn't been as fast as necessary to keep Detroit competitive.
Sam?
Well, first of all, the engine that's been driving Ford, Chrysler, and particularly GM is the trucks. And by that I mean trucks and SUVs. And that has really been where they've been able to make the money. They haven't been able to compete in a lot of the others. Their trucks really have been very, very competitive. And when the market fell apart in September and dropped off and it just hit the wall, number one, there's no money available for these companies to borrow. No one is borrowing money because no one's lending money. That's the biggest single problem on this financial downturn that we've not seen any other financial. It's 92. We saw
So if you take, as the Democrats are suggesting, if you take $25 billion of the $700 billion that was supposed to go to the financial industry, if you take $25 billion away from them, there are some banks that aren't going to get money. There are some people who want to go to those banks to start their companies or to improve their companies. They're going to be out of luck.
Well, we passed that with the idea that it was going to be used to support the market. We were going to buy mortgages. We're now not going to buy mortgages because that doesn't do anything for the economy, and that was an ill-conceived idea that Congress and the administration bought into. They've now changed their mind, and they now say we've got to do things that are going to incentivize business. Now,
but how we
got 750.
They could change their mind next
week. Yeah, well,
week.
You know what? We said we're going to bail at AIG. We're $50 billion short on that already. I mean, right now we are in uncharted waters, and the administration, the Congress, and the new administration are all going to struggle mightily to try to figure out a solution to this problem because we've not faced it before. And the big problem is keep people working, getting additional jobs into the marketplace, getting businesses to grow, and none of them can borrow money. The single biggest complaint we have in America today from American business, whether they be big or small, is they cannot borrow money. Yet we've put hundreds of billion dollars into the banks, and they're not loaning any money yet. The next round of money, we're going to condition it on them really loaning money out.
And if we gave the big three oil or the big three automobile companies, if we gave them the $25 billion, as you said, it wouldn't last very long.
No,
it could barely last to the end of the year. So what's January and February and March going to be like? Do they just think that everybody is waiting and is going to go out and pay cash
for the new Volt when it comes out, so they can plug it into the garage?
And then they have to wonder whether there's going to be enough electricity if the Volt sells like people expect it to. I think that what's interesting about this conversation, we've got, you know, Sam Skinner, we've got a liberal, we've got a conservative on here, and I think all of us, Bruce, I think everybody listening, the key words are uncharted waters. And I guess my response to this whole thing would be we know all these machinations on the left and the right, you know, the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, whatever, have brought us here. Let's just basically first do no harm. Maybe the best thing we can do is just to see what works itself out. You know, there's foreign capital. There's people that might be lending from those sources. This idea that we've just got to start writing checks out of the government, what is it? They just added $1.2 trillion?
All my suggestion is instead of going to, you know, in a China mm-hmm. or somewhere around the world to look for some money on this, let's look at the oil companies. Let's see if there's some collective responsibility. If this is, mm-hmm. and everybody is saying this is the worst situation since the Depression, yeah. This is a national security issue.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And what I'm saying is that in times of national security, sometimes you got to think beyond the box. They're sitting on a large chunk of dollars. Let them bail out the industry that they need for them to make profits in the future.
Oil companies are drawing down on their reserves. We're not replenishing reserves at the rate that we need to replenish them. So if you're going to divert $25, $50, $100 billion from the oil companies, that means you're going to take them away from production. You're going to wait for production development. You're going to cut down the reserves. And you're going to make us more energy dependent on world sources than we are
today. We got to pause. 1-800-723-8029. Back shortly.
I'm Errol Squires, inventor of Relieve One-Day Cold Sore Symptom Treatment. I invented Relieve because I wanted a very effective, natural treatment for cold sores that worked really fast. Relieve works so well and so fast for me, my family, and friends, I wanted to help other people who suffer from cold sores. I think people are smart enough to know if something works. If you suffer from cold sores, try Relieve and find out if it works for you. Relieve is comprised of botanical extracts and is guaranteed. Buy Relieve now at all major stores.
Here to tell you that Geico.com is easy to use. I bet you already knew that. A website that's convenient and fast. Well, really, had no idea. Of course it's fast and easy. Now, allow me to go off script and tell you why Geico.com is so great. First, you can get a free rate quote right then and there. You can update your policy, make a payment, even report and track a claim. There's the news. There's the big aha. Sorry, just had to get it off my chest.
For a free rate quote, visit Geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
From Youngstown, Ohio, to Fresno, California, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Our liberal tonight is Georgia Logothetis. She is one of the leading liberal bloggers in the United States. She is the contributing editor of the Daily Kos, and she's a happy camper because Barack Obama was elected president of the United States, although we're going to have you back on this program periodically to see if you still have that smile on your face after a few months of sitting in the White House. Bruno Barrett also joins us. He has a website, which is called, give it to us one more time.
ExtremeWisdom.com.
And also you're with the Illinois Citizens Coalition.
Founded the Illinois Citizens Coalition.
And a former talk show host and a former
Illinois entrepreneur, talk show host, and still going to be a talk show host.
Man,
I love radio.
Man about town.
Yes.
Also joining us this evening is Sam Skinner. Once upon a time, he was the Secretary of the Department of Transportation from 1989 to 1991. He was then the Chief of Staff to President George Herbert Walker Bush in 1991 and 1992, and a veteran of Illinois political wars in that he once upon a time was the United States Attorney for the Northern District of Illinois. Again, a reminder that if you want to watch or listen to this broadcast, the streaming of video and audio version of it can be found on our website, which is beyondthebeltway.com. And if you have an email comment for us, our email address is btb@museum.tv. btb@museum.tv. We read all of the emails, and we respond to as many of them as we possibly can. And again, thanks very much for our new home. If you're watching us on television in Chicago on Channel 20 and Comcast, you notice that the background looks a little bit different this evening because we're doing the broadcast this evening from our new home at the Sirius XM Studios in the city of Chicago on the Great West Side. And also, before we go too much further talking about our radio affiliates, one of our oldest radio affiliates is WNTK in New London, New Hampshire. Bob Vinicor and his wife Shirley just celebrated their 20th anniversary as a radio station, and they have been with Beyond the Beltway for 15 of those years. One of our oldest affiliates. I met him on the snowy slopes of the primary campaign in 1992 in New Hampshire. We became good friends, so congratulations to Bob and Sheila Vinicor of WNTK, great broadcasters from the great state of New Hampshire. We have lots of telephone callers on the line. Let's go to line two, where Jim is listening to us on WLS.
Good evening. A very good show as usual.
Thank you.
I have kind of a question for the panel in general. As you know, the price of energy has been part of the problem with the automobile industry, and yet the union leadership supports people like Barack Obama and all these liberal Democrats that are in bed with the environmentalists. So by supporting these people, they're keeping the price of fuel high, which causes SUV workers, for example, a lot of union people, and all the accessory industries to suffer. So I don't understand why it is that people support the politicians that hurt their very base.
George Ologothides.
Well, I think there were, you know, quite a few leaps of logic in that caller's statement. As a threshold matter, the policies that are being advocated by the Democratic Party are policies that help the automotive industry. When
but
we're talking about
time, ma'am, that doesn't do anything but keep cars more expensive if people stay away. Look at the SUVs. They shut the plant up in Beloit that made SUVs. All those union guys are losing their job because the fuel is so high people could buy them. It's not a leap of logic at all.
Well, the idea being that the policies that we're talking about here, which are, you know, reshifting our energy policy from an oil-based economy to really these alternative fuels and alternative fuel cell vehicles. The Chevy Volt that's coming out is, you know, a great first step. But that step would not have occurred had it not been for the pressure from environmentalists and from, you know, progressives in the environmental movement to say, you know what, making environmentally friendly cars is not just good for the environment. It's what we need in our economy. Asian and European automakers have been doing it for so long. And that has made us not be able to compete, the fact that we're still an oil-based economy. So I do think that the Democratic Party certainly cannot be faulted for the fact that Detroit is failing.
A question I would have is that during the Clinton-Gore administration, when there was an explosion of sales insofar as SUVs, America fell in love with SUVs on that watch. I mean, Al Gore, I don't remember Al Gore ever standing up and saying, don't buy those gas guzzlers, don't buy those things. He never told people that they were going to cause, you know, problems for the environment. Where was he? He had 8 years of a bully pulpit.
Well, I think
Did you ever hear anybody say that?
Well,
Was there a caution? I mean, Jimmy Carter told us to turn the heat down. I mean, we remember that.
Nobody wanted to touch the issue because that is those three major companies, their major income stream, profitable income stream, was from SUVs. The major constituents of the Democratic Party is the United Auto Workers and all of the related unions, and the oil companies and also the automobile companies, a major constituency of the Republican Party. So as long as the oil was available at reasonable prices, no one was willing to touch it. We started to touch it when gas started to get to be $4 a gallon. That's the first time Republicans and Democrats throughout this country started saying we've got to do something about it because we're spending too much money for gasoline. And that was the
impetus. Everybody was in the same boat. The Republicans, they were all in the same boat.
See, Bruce,
eat, drink, and be merry. Don't plan ahead.
This would be my
answer.
Of course,
when Al Gore, then when he came out.
Exactly.
Don't blame Al Gore. There's a lot of people in the boat with Al Gore.
Exactly.
Oh, I know
so
that.
Here's what I think.
But they also haven't, you know, hoisted themselves up on their own petard telling everybody else they shouldn't drive big cars.
Jim raises a good point. But what everybody listening needs to know is that Americans believe they have a God-given right to cheap gas, and they don't. And so we've been protected by cheap gas, and then we have these CAFE standards that apply to cars. So then people get to build trucks, and then everybody wants to buy trucks. And you go to Europe, and you have a much more dynamic auto industry. This is going to sound like a shock coming from a conservative, but we ought to be cutting people's Social Security tax and increasing gas taxes so that we can have a more vibrant automotive industry and lower taxes on workers. That's good policy. If either party, any politician from either party advocated that, they'd lose their next election.
Let's go to Larry listening to us in Florida on XM Radio. Whereabouts in Florida, Larry?
Yes. Close to Ocala.
Okay, very good. What can we do for you tonight?
Well, I read back in the spring where Ford Motor Company announced that they're going to spend $3 billion building a plant in Mexico to build the Ford Fiesta, the new car that's going to come out in early 2010, in which they're going to resell back to the American worker. And they did it on the agreement that they would pay the Mexican worker about $2 an hour. They also announced that they're going to build a transmission plant there in Mexico. At the same time, in June of this year, they just closed a transmission plant in Batavia, Ohio. You know, Ford, they, all the CEOs, you know, the top management, all have big salaries. I haven't heard one of them yet say, you know what, I don't need to make $10 million, $5 million is good enough, or $3 million is good enough. I haven't seen the leadership out of them. They want everybody else to take pay cuts and lay people off. But I've yet to see any announcement from Ford or GM about their executives taking huge pay cuts for the bad job they've been doing. So they want to take the taxpayers' money on this bailout and then yet build the cars in Mexico and then try to sell them back to the American taxpayer who bailed them out. It's just not right.
Sam, your reaction?
Well, I think that if, in fact, the companies can't get through this crisis, they're all going to file for bankruptcy, and then you're going to see a lot of impetus on the behalf of management, foregoing bonuses and their salary being frozen. And in addition, the auto workers are going to have to restructure their labor agreements on health benefits and salary to get more competitive. And you'll see that. That'll happen probably within a year.
We should also mention in the second hour of our broadcast this evening, we're going to be joined by Rick Albin of WOOD Radio and Television in Grand Rapids. He's been covering Michigan politics for a long time. We're going to look at the politics, the impact on the economy and the politics, because the politics of Michigan and the impact of the automobile industry politically in that state is an interesting part of the broader political discussion, and we'll hear from him in a moment. But let's go to Louisville, Kentucky, where Greg is listening to us on Sirius XM Radio tonight.
How you doing, Bruce?
Hello.
We are looking at treating cancer with Band-Aids in these bailouts. I'm a businessman. I've run a business for 24 years on my own, and I have worked in corporate America since 1971. And while corporate America certainly does have its flaws and foibles, et cetera, as we see with the management of the car companies today, by just not properly reacting to how the market was trending, I just don't think government can find its own rear end with both hands on a roadmap. These bailouts are Band-Aids. The cancer of the auto industry, besides bad management, is the labor cost per vehicle is a fixed cost, and compared to the Japanese car makers and other car makers from overseas that have plants in this country, is astronomically higher. And until you can deal with a fixed cost problem, those per unit costs on those vehicles are not coming down. And then you've got the head of the UAW coming out and saying there's no way they're going to renegotiate that. And then the same with the housing market bailout. The problem is the ineptitude of the federal government creating those boondoggles called Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and then those absolutely inept senators and congressmen like Barney Frank and Chris Dodd lying to the American people in 2003 and again in 2005, saying everything's fine. As far as I'm concerned, those guys should be tried, indicted, and sued into the Stone Age.
Well, now he says there's no downside to this. It seems to me that this thing has got nothing but downside.
Well, until you treat the cancer is shut down Fannie and Freddie. The federal government has no constitutional authority to run a mortgage business, none. And until the auto industry can sit down with the UAW and say, here's the raw deal. If we do not renegotiate our labor costs and drop these costs down per vehicle, and then go to the federal government and say things like, you do not have the business of telling us how many miles per gallon we should be making for our cars, because that also adds cost. Every time there's a government
Greg, we've got to move on. Thanks very much for your car. We're going to a break. 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont in Chicago.
Today, let's talk about driving. Let's talk about commuting. You think yours is tough? I got news for you. Everybody thinks theirs is tough. Take the pizza guy. He not only has to do his commute, but once he gets to his job, he's got to go right back out there in the middle of your commute to get some guy a pie in 30 minutes or less. Fact is, our cars and trucks just got to take it. That's why there's Good Wrench and Go. It helps your Chevy continue to take it. Good Wrench and Go is happening right now at your participating Chevy dealer. Just head down their Good Wrench service lane. With Good Wrench and Go, you'll get an oil change, tire rotation, and a Good Wrench multi-point vehicle inspection all in one tidy package. And while you're there, have them check your tires. Should you need them, they can recommend the proper tires for your Chevy.
Can't stop thinking about it.
So, between now and November 30th, give it a go and make it Good Wrench and Go at your participating Chevy dealer. One way to know if Good Wrench and Go is right for you, visit goodwrench.com and click on Chevy.
Bloomington, Illinois to Miami, Florida. You're listening to Beyond the Beltway on America's great radio stations and also on XM Satellite Radio. And let's go to Robert listening to us in Bloomington, Illinois on WLS. Go ahead. He is gone, so let's go to Steve on line two, KTSM in El Paso, Texas.
Hi, Bruce and everybody.
Hello.
Hi. I live in West Texas, where driving long distances is unavoidable. Mass transit just doesn't work. And partly because of that, I've driven subcompact cars for the last 10 years that get better than 40 miles per gallon. It really angers me to hear people saying that they need to increase taxes on gasoline and punish me for other morons that have been driving gas guzzlers and causing the problem. And I will fight such proposals with every fiber in my being.
Bruno.
What I said specifically, they ought to swap taxes out. I am not for any net tax increase at all. I am not for any net tax increase at all for anybody. What I'm saying is that there's bad policy and there's good policy. We Americans do not have a God-given right to cheap gas. Now, maybe it should be market prices. Maybe they should have taxes on it. All I can tell you is that you go to Europe and you have an unbelievably vibrant auto market with all kinds of different cars, all the way from gas guzzlers to, you know, GM makes an Opel that diesel that gets 60 miles to the gallon. And you can fit everything in it.
Let me ask you a question. What is GM building what are they building in China? What are they selling in China? Because, I mean, they're immensely successful in Europe. They're immensely successful in China. What are the Chinese buying, Sam?
Well, they're not immensely successful in China anymore. Their big name brand car in China was the Buick. The Buick was a brand that was there after the war, and it was a brand. But now, as Chinese manufacturers and others have gone into China, it's become much more competitive. So I don't know that what their exact profits are. But in Asia, the Asian manufacturers are still the ones that have the biggest market share. In Europe, they do make cars that have been very successful. They're more fuel efficient cars. They're smaller cars. They don't sell in the United States because people want more room. They're used to more room, and they don't need to have a fuel-efficient car because they can afford $2 and $2.20 a gallon. When you're in Europe, they can't afford that. And by the way, the cars are more expensive in Europe as well.
Bruno?
I think the caller had something left to say. I wasn't sure. But I think from the standpoint of successful cars this is what drives me so crazy. We have this unbelievably innovative technology industry. We've got Google, we've got Apple, we've got iPods, and the U.S. car manufacturers, for whatever – and I'm not saying that they don't have the engineers to design a good car. It's just that they haven't put one on the market for us. They've put decent cars on the market everywhere else, but not
here. But the expectation is very high for the Volt, the electric car. But you don't have any
– Well, there was a really good article by
– You and Sam were saying that may not be all that it's cracked up to be.
Well, Holman Jenkins is an author, a writer. He writes for the Wall Street Journal. He had an article on the Volt that basically said it's being hyped. Number one, you know, it's going to have a huge energy drain. Number two, it takes a long time to charge for any time you do go over 40 miles. He was throwing a little bit of cold water on it. That's not to say that the car might not be very successful.
Don't throw cold water on an electric car.
Exactly. that's true, too. But, you know, who knows what the answer is? It's just that we need to have more ideas faster and a sclerotic management that is having to being forced to kowtow to what I would consider overly powerful unions isn't a way to do that.
I want to go back to response to earlier questions we asked for those people that may have just tuned in. Sam, what happens if the government doesn't bail out the automobile industry? Give us the scenario. Paint the pictures for us. What is life going to be like in Detroit and Michigan and around the nation if that happens?
All three companies will file for bankruptcy within the year. They will file for a Chapter 11 reorganization. At that time, they will be able to continue business and continue to sell cars. They'll put a little stigma on their reputation because they'll be in bankruptcy. The first thing they will do is they will attempt to restructure their costs. And the main cost that they'll try to restructure, just like the airline industry did it and others, is they will try to restructure their labor costs to get labor costs frozen or down below where they are, to do something about health care, to do something about retirement benefits, and also
– Hang on just a second. I'm going to interrupt you. Carry that scenario. I want to hear from the liberal now. Carry the scenario. Now it's with the labor. Now what's going to happen next?
Well, I think that this is where the pressure gets on in terms of having the Obama administration step up to the plate and keep some of its promises that it made during the campaign.
Such as?
In other words, well, obviously he didn't use the phrase universal health care, but, you know, universally affordable health care. And setting up a type of health care system where you can take offload some of the pressure from the auto industries and pull it into a much larger type of framework where these workers can say, you know what, I don't want to have this type of, you know, I don't want to put the burden on my employer. I'm going to use this program that was set up by the Obama administration, have access to
money
quality.
Money coming from where? Where's the money coming from for that?
Government.
For the new plan, for the new Obama health care plan, which is going to take the pressure off
Obama has set forth, you know, a wide range of where that money is going to come from. Part of it, obviously, is going to come from more efficient government in terms of cutting spending and some of the ineffective programs. Some of it will come from the drawdown from the war, which obviously is just a huge drain on our economy. So there are methods of having that type of framework set in place without the necessity of a tax increase.
Where do you think it comes from?
Well, it could come from cutting spending on military, or it could come from higher taxes on every American worker who's going to have less money to buy cars.
And that's your bet.
That's my bet.
That's your bet. On that note, we want to thank all of our guests. George Logothides, thanks very much for being with us in hour number one. Sam Skinner, former White House Chief of Staff of George Herbert Walker Bush. Bruno Barron, thanks very much, our conservative. They will all be back for another full hour of discussion. Next hour, we're going to be talking about Hillary Clinton, whether or not she will be the next Secretary of State. We're also going to be hearing from Rick Albin, veteran political reporter in WOOD in Grand Rapids, Michigan. He's going to be talking about the issue of bailing out the automobile industry and the impact that industry has on the state of Michigan. And where does Michigan politics fit into this? And should anybody in Michigan get anything, especially the automobile people? We'll get that reaction from Rick in the next hour. 1-800-723-8289 if you're listening to us on radio, if you're watching us on television. And thanks to Scott Clifton, who helped put this broadcast together tonight. Scott, we thank you very much for your assistance. We'll be back in just a short time for those listening to us on radio.
Let's talk about the power of going home. At the end of a workday, we go home. The holidays, you head home. Late night and the party's over, maybe you don't go alone, but you still go home. Why? Going home makes us feel good. And in case you hadn't noticed, there's a home for your Cadillac. It's down your Cadillac dealer's Good Wrench service lane, where right now, at participating locations, it's Good Wrench and Go time. With Good Wrench and Go, you can give your Cadillac the home loving it deserves with an oil change, tire rotation, and a Good Wrench multi-point vehicle inspection all in one package. And while you're there, have them check your tires. Should you need them, they can recommend the proper tires for your Cadillac.
I can't stop thinking about it.
So, between now and November 30th, give it a go and make it Good Wrench and Go at your participating Cadillac dealer. One way to know if Good Wrench and Go is right for you, visit GoodWrench.com and click on Cadillac.
Did you know that Geico insures more than cars? It's true, they cover tons of other things like hot air balloons, unicycles and roller skates. Nah, I'm just messing with you. But Geico can help insure lots of other vehicles, though, like motorcycles, RVs, ATVs, personal watercraft, boats, and pogo sticks. I'm only kidding about the pogo sticks, but seriously, just so there's no confusion, Geico now offers insurance on more than just your car.
Geico, saving you money on insurance for your car and the other stuff that moves you. Visit Geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
Do you suffer from cold sores? Relief One Day Cold Sore Symptom Treatment is out to prove how fast it really works. If you suffer from those nasty sores, try Relief and find out for yourself if Relief works really fast for you. Relief is spelled R-E-L-E-E-V. It's easy to find and is in all major drugstores. So if you get cold sores, remember to get Relief now and keep it ready to use the moment a cold sore attacks.
You know, I always appreciate it when someone goes the extra mile. And that's why I love those folks who make Clear Eyes eye drops. They put an extra moisturizing ingredient in every Clear Eyes product in the entire line, even their redness formula. An extra moisturizer they never even told us about. See, they're humble, too. So if you want eye drops that do the job, and then some, get Clear Eyes. Use as directed.
Healthy lips should never go naked. So what are you going to wear? How about ChapStick 100% Naturals? It's the all-natural way to keep lips feeling healthy. And it slides on so comfortably smooth. Or why not try on new ChapStick True Shimmer? It's the only ChapStick with shimmering highlights to give lips a beautiful, radiant shine every time you put it on. So if you want lips to look and feel healthy, never let your lips go naked. Always wear ChapStick.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by conservative Bruno Barron, liberal Georgia Logothetis, former White House Chief of Staff Samuel Skinner, and Rick Albin, political reporter for WOOD Radio in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And our phone lines open 1-800-723-8289. And in hour number one, we have been asking the question and debating the issue. Should taxpayers bail out the automobile industry? We're going to be talking about its impact on the state of Michigan in just a few moments. But I did want to talk and put on the record some things that Sam Skinner was sharing with the group during the commercial break. And you say you serve on four boards, and the conversations that you have as a member of those boards discussing the economy.
Well, you know, and you're on a public board, you try to get as much information you can from as many different sources as you can about what the economic situation is going to be, particularly in next year, 2009, because you're setting budgets and doing things that businesses normally do. And universally, the input that the boards I'm on is getting from economists all over the country is that basically it's going to be a very tough year. It'll probably be a recession through the entire year. Maybe it'll come out towards the end. Will come out towards the end of the year, but it is going to be probably a longer recession than we've normally seen. And it's going to be deeper than we've normally seen. So we're in for some tough economic times. But I think Americans know that now.
In the first hour, we were talking obviously about the automobile industry and oil companies as well and their huge profits. But I would like to take just a moment because, again, as a former Secretary of Transportation, I would like to get a sense from you as to in the last 15, 20 years since you have been as Secretary of Transportation, what grade would you give the government in sort of changing the attitudes towards transportation? Is the transportation plan for America, is it on the right track? Is it on the wrong track? Are governments, both federal and state governments, are they taking the challenges of mass transportation in a growing population seriously, in your view?
Well, they've done some things. They've developed partnerships, public-private partnerships that have been somewhat successful. They've privatized some transportation resources. They're, you know, the mayor is going to do the airport, for example. But we really haven't touched the real problem and gotten to the real problem is that we have a decaying infrastructure, and we've got to put money into the infrastructure. Senator Obama, now President-elect Obama, has talked about that as part of his program. But we have an infrastructure that isn't really ready to service this nation for the next 50 years, and it's decaying rapidly, and we've got to do something about it.
Would you put that on your if the president-elect was listening to the program this evening,
yeah,
would you put that on the top 3 to 5 things that you think he should do, because it is tied with economic expansion as well?
Well, he has already put it at the top of his list, and a number of his advisors are talking about, as part of an incentive program to get the economy working again, a major infrastructure investment program that would put people back to work rebuilding infrastructure, much the way the Public Works program did during the Depression. Now, that takes a while to put into place. You've got to design the projects, and then you've got to let the contracts and get them back to work. But I think he's already there, frankly.
The government heat lamp now is on the automobile industry because of their request for $25 billion, which, as you say, won't last very long if indeed they get it. Where is the airline industry? Where is that industry going? It's been off the front pages for the last several months, but how healthy are they?
Well, a number of them have restructured through bankruptcy, done many of the same things that GM, Ford, and Chrysler will have to do before they're really going to get their ship righted. They've cut back 20% of their capacity. So if you fly in and out of O'Hare, which I do on a regular basis, the planes are on time a lot more than they used to be because there's 20% fewer flights in and out of O'Hare right now. They have tried to raise prices where they can and add additional charges. The big thing that's happened to them is that the oil price of oil has dropped down to $70 or below. And they put business plans in place last year that they thought the price of oil would be at $150 a barrel. So this year could be a good year for the airline industry because a lot of them now have cut the capacity, and now they've got about a third of their cost are fuel, and that's been cut about 40%. So they'll have a decent year this year if the economy stays down where it is, but it won't be a great year because of the downturn in the economy.
Bruno Behrend is our conservative tonight. In response to question number one early in the broadcast, you were talking about the automobile industry. Historically, they've made a lot of bad decisions, and also the role of the UAW and unions. Share that with Rick Albin, who's listening to this, because I want to get his reaction from Grand Rapids, Michigan, whether he agrees with your comments or not.
I'm being the conservative, and I could go into the story about how I was raised. I've never been a good union guy. I understand why unions exist. I understand why they came into being. You've got private company unions, private unionization. And I think they drove very hard bargains with the airline industry, and look what they got. Now you're in the situation where they drove a very hard bargain for healthcare costs and wages with the auto industry, and look what they got. And then you've got the other side of the question, which is public employee unions, which are basically bankrupting this country. Teachers unions, that's not necessarily national, but state by state, they're actually creating an unbelievable economic drain on states like Illinois.
Before Georgia responds to that, I do want to turn and bring Rick Albin into our political conversation. He is the veteran political reporter for WOOD Radio and Television, one of our flagship stations for Beyond the Beltway in the great state of Michigan. Rick, nice to have you with us.
Bruce, always great to be with you.
When you talk about bailing out the automotive industry, how is that issue playing in Grand Rapids?
Well, it's a huge issue. I mean, we just found out that one of the General Motors stamping plants that is in Wyoming, which is adjacent to Grand Rapids, will close sooner than had been anticipated. The fact is that in Michigan it is a big issue. But one of the things that we have heard in the last couple of weeks, I think this is important. This isn't just a Michigan issue. It's not about bailing out Detroit. It's about affecting 1 in 10 or 12 jobs in this country. And I think it is interesting to see how little we make anymore in this country. So as a consumer, not necessarily as a reporter, I'm interested to see what happens because at some point I probably can't buy a radio to listen to your show on that was made in this country. I can't buy a television to watch my Sunday morning television show that was made in this country. At some point, it seems to me, and again, reporters aren't economists. In fact, I'm not even sure we're allowed to do math. But the fact of the matter is you would think we would need to build something at some point, and we have at least been building cars for a number of years.
But from a political standpoint, with the Democrats now asking to bail out the automotive industry, there are some suggesting is that they're helping out an industry that because of their relationship with the UAW, there's a lot of constituents that happen to be maybe Democratic voters, and that maybe that's an industry that they may be a little bit easier or more willing to bail out than industries that might have fewer Democratic members.
I won't argue that point. I don't know what their motivation is going to be, but I think you have to look at what the general impact is of the automotive industry. Now, obviously, in Michigan, it has a somewhat disproportionate effect, but it will have an effect in a lot of places, including in Illinois, including in places like Minnesota and other places where they build parts for cars. And it isn't just about the big three. If parts suppliers start going out of business because the big three fail, they also provide parts for foreign automakers, and that could put a real pressure on them, too.
Rick, we're going to pause 1-800-723-8029. If you're listening to us on WOD in Grand Rapids, you can call in, share your thoughts with radio listeners from coast to coast and border to border on satellite all around the world. 1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont. Tonight, live from Chicago.
Today, let's talk about the good things, about where you can find them. Like when you go into a store and you want the best, what do? You ask the clerk what he's got in the back. And if he likes you, he says he'll be right back. Shoes, cigars, even the butcher. The best stuff is always in the back. So, when it comes to getting what's best for your Buick, Pontiac, or GMC, head to your participating dealer right now and drive around back down their Good Wrench service lane for Good Wrench and Go Time. For a limited time, you can get an oil change, tire rotation, and a Good Wrench multi-point vehicle inspection all in one package. And while you're there, have them check your tires. Should you need them, they can recommend the proper tires for your vehicle.
I can't stop thinking about it.
So, between now and November 30th, give it a go and make it Good Wrench and Go at your participating Buick, Pontiac, or GMC dealer. One way to know if Good Wrench and Go is right for you, visit GoodWrench.com and click on your GM brand.
From San Diego, California to Seattle, Washington, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. George Logothites is here, and George, I know you want to talk about Hillary Clinton, and we're going to do that in just a few moments. But again, I want to get back to Rick Albin, mm-hmm. because, Rick, you have a unique perspective in covering Michigan politics. And, you know, looking back on the most recent election, a lot of people were surprised that John McCain threw in the towel so quickly on the state of Michigan. How upset were local Republicans, and is there any way at all that John McCain could have done better there?
Well, I don't know about the last part of the question, but I think that there were a lot of Republicans who, at least privately, were more than a little unhappy, and it had a big effect when you consider the amount of money that the Republican State Party had to spend on other elections, and the number of seats that they lost, 9 in the state House. None of the state Senate seats were up. So now Democrats have a command and control in the House. Republicans lost any number of seats, including, even though it's a supposedly nonpartisan race for the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. So John McCain pulling out meant a whole lot less attention paid to Republicans in the state, and it had a big impact.
Earlier in the broadcast, I asked Sam Skinner and our guests in Chicago to paint a picture about what would happen if a bailout did not come to the automotive industry. In your view, paint a picture for us, what would happen in the state of Michigan?
Well, I can't calculate the number of people that would lose their jobs. Now, when they were talking about a merger between Chrysler and General Motors, the estimate was somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 to 30,000 in the state of Michigan. Now, if one of those entities, and let's say it's GM, goes under, those numbers would quadruple. We would be into double-digit or 20% unemployment in the state of Michigan is likely. Again, I'm just using numbers, guesstimating as much as anything. But the amount of impact that it would have on individuals, on the ability of businesses to survive, we're already in a very difficult situation. I think I did your show the first time, I don't know, Bruce, a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Yes.
We talked then about the difficulty that Michigan was going through. Our economy has been sagging for much longer than the national economy. But the next big question is, if all of that happens, what happens to the state itself? I mean, the state budget's been in trouble for years. The governor will issue an executive order later this year to trim, we don't know, maybe 500 million, maybe $750 million, upwards of $1 billion, we don't know, out of a $43 billion budget. Fact is, if GM, for example, should cease to exist, and if there were some non-structured collapse of that company, the effect on Michigan, I would suggest on the rest of the country, but certainly on Michigan, would be devastating.
Now, Western Michigan has a lot of conservative thinkers out there. Those that listen to WOOD, what has been their reaction to the possibility of a bailout of the automotive industry? Is it because you're dealing with a with at least a lot of those on the eastern side of your own state? I mean, is there a different attitude bailing out this industry than another industry?
Well, I can tell you that their first blush reaction to bailing out Wall Street was negative by about 98%. That modified itself a little bit as that became a little more clear, but I'd like to go back and take some numbers now since that plan has changed at least three times since it was first explained by the government. As far as the auto industry goes, you're right. Most of the corporate headquarters, of course, are all on the east side of the state, and a lot of the heavy lifting, the production companies and the assembly plants. But there are a lot of ancillary plants, a lot of production folks, in, you know, tool and die and all kinds of production people that are involved. We haven't done any polling directly about some type of a bailout for the automotive industry.
If you were, if we were sitting around a, you know, a either a bar or a coffee klatch in Grand Rapids, would the old timers, would they be talking about how the automotive managers in Detroit have not only screwed up the automotive industry, but the state of Michigan and the national economy? And well, how irate would they be with those people that have decades of bad decisions?
Two out of three, I think you'd get. They screwed up the automotive industry and made some bad decisions. The state probably has some of its own blame to take for the condition that it's in. But, yeah, I think there would be people that would say, and I think it would be naive to think that the automotive industry hasn't made some bad decisions. But, by the way, I would point out so did a bunch of people on Wall Street.
Right,
but
historically, I mean, didn't the state of Michigan at a state level, didn't they? I mean, just because of the politics of the state and the growth of the unions, weren't they doing things to help bail out in a mini way the automobile industry 20 and 30 and 40 years ago?
Yeah, probably.
And again, were they perpetuating some of these people who were making these bad decisions then?
Yeah, probably the same way that the state of Kansas helped wheat farmers when maybe they shouldn't have. And the things that you do to help support the industry that supports your state. Now, what was the politics of it? You know, I wasn't in Michigan covering politics 30 years ago, but I can tell you that, yes, I think that government has tried to do what they can to try to prop up the automotive industry. But after all, it's the biggest industry in the state, and that somehow seems responsible.
Sam Skinner.
One thing I forgot to mention when we talked about the alternative and maybe the inevitable will be the bankruptcy of these three companies going through a Chapter 11 reorganization. But if you cannot get what they call debtor in possession financing, DIP financing, you can't do a Chapter 11 reorganization. Today there's serious question whether any of these automobile companies could get financing after they went into reorganization. People aren't loaning money for anything. So it might be a Chapter 7 liquidation, and that's something I think government is taking into consideration too, because I don't think if it came to the availability of a loan after bankruptcy, the government might put a loan on the table after bankruptcy because there would be no other lending available.
Georgia, you had a comment?
Oh, well, I just wanted to agree with the idea that you know, when you have an industry that's supported, that essentially supports a state, then you have the issue. This is why D.C. is paying so close attention because, you know, yes, there's problems on the national scale, but here we're talking about, you know, as was rightly pointed out, you know, upwards of, you know, double digits, 20% of people being unemployed in a state. And yes, it's a blue state, and yes, we can talk about all the political considerations there, but I mean, really, practically here, we're talking about a large number of jobs at stake. And whether you're on, you know, the red side of the aisle, the blue side of the aisle, it really becomes an issue of, you know, here we are dealing with a mess again. We dealt with it with Wall Street. We're dealing with it now again. And how many American jobs are we willing to lose out of inaction?
Let's go to Bob listening to us in Youngstown, Ohio on WKBN. Go ahead, Bob.
Bruce, something's been bothering me. Now, I voted for Obama, and Obama's all for the auto loans and that. But yet, when it was Wall Street that was getting the bailout, he couldn't get to Washington fast enough to vote for that one.
Well, he has not come out necessarily and said that he's for the auto bailout. He basically says that he wants all of the stakeholders. In fact, what he said this evening on 60 Minutes, he wants all of the stakeholders, labor and management, the suppliers, the lenders, all the stakeholders to come together to come up with a cohesive plan, not just a bailout. He wants them to take a look at some of the systemic problems that exist there, because he feels that obviously if the government's going to be providing some funds here, a substantial amount of money, that they're in a position to maybe drive a hard bargain. So
right.
I don't he's not he resigned from the Senate today.
Yeah.
As did, I guess, Joe Biden is going to resign in the next 48 hours because George Bush is still the president of the United States. He has to deal with the existing Congress. And the question is whether or not there's enough votes there to get a bailout before the end of the year.
Yeah, but couldn't he was for the bailout. I heard him say that. And he could have got up on the Senate floor and kind of fought for what he said he was going to do. And remember, he's got a vote, right? That's one vote shy they are tomorrow, next week.
He did have a vote.
He said Wall Street and Main Street. For Wall Street, he was 100%. For Main Street, he goes south.
All right. Well, listen, thanks very much for your call. Let's go to... Go ahead, Joe. You're on the air.
I got a question here about, if you're looking... If we use $760 billion to bail out Wall Street, I mean, $25 billion to me would seem like pocket change to bail out the automakers. But my question is, if they would have gone through the taxpayers or the homeowners, if they would have given this money and paid down homeowners' mortgages, let's say gave everybody $250,000 to pay down their mortgage, even if somebody owned $200,000, so they pay $200,000, pay off his mortgage, wouldn't the banks get that money? Wouldn't that money get funneled into the banks, and you wouldn't have problems with golden parachutes and all these other guys taking this money now and doing stuff? But the taxpayers are being helped at the same time.
Bruno.
It's an interesting point, and I haven't run all the numbers. I think we're all throwing a lot of numbers out around saying, well, $250,000, and then who gets the $250,000? The struggling family, or does the speculator who went south on his Las Vegas or Florida condo project get the $250,000? I just hope, Bruce, that everybody takes a step back. I mean, just listen to the calls. And listen to what's happened to the United States of America. The people who brought us, rugged individualism and capitalism, and every single person in America wants a bailout. Every single person says, I deserve a bailout. I deserve this. I deserve that. What happened to this country? Here's the thing. You want to fix Detroit? I got news for you. Tell the unions that, just like you don't have a right to cheap gas, you don't have a right to first dollar health coverage either.
I want to get reaction from everybody else. Rick Albin, thanks very much for taking the pulse of Michigan politics this evening. Rick Albin, veteran political reporter for WOOD, joining us tonight from Grand Rapids, Michigan. I'm Bruce Dumont, taking America's political pulse from coast to coast and border to border every Sunday night. Tonight from our new home at the Sirius XM Studios on Chicago's Great West Side.
Healthy lips should never go naked. So, are you going to slip on ChapStick Moisturizer? It's made of 10 moisturizers, so it feels light and smooth and ultra hydrating. Or there's something completely new for you to put on. It's new ChapStick True Shimmer with shimmering highlights to give lips a beautiful, radiant shine every time you put it on. So if you want lips to look and feel healthy, never let your lips go naked. Always wear ChapStick. Use as directed.
I'm Errol Squires, inventor of Relieve One-Day Cold Sore Symptom Treatment. I invented Relieve because I wanted a very effective, natural treatment for cold sores that work really fast. Relieve works so well and so fast for me, my family, and friends, I wanted to help other people who suffer from cold sores. I think people are smart enough to know if something works. If you suffer from cold sores, try Relieve and find out if it works for you. Relieve is comprised of botanical extracts and is guaranteed. Buy Relieve now at all major stores.
From Sacramento, California to Greenville, South Carolina, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. Our liberal tonight is Georgia Logothetis. She is the contributing editor of the Daily Kos, and she is one of the leading liberal bloggers in the United States, and she's an attorney in private practice when she is not also on the radio sharing her thoughts with us. Also, when she's not over in, where do you go? Do you go to Greece for four?
To Greece, yeah.
For four months a year.
Well, I used to, and then now, you know, I've cut back to about 3 weeks since I entered private practice. Sure, sure.
Your public is demanding your opinions. Bruno Brab.
She goes to Cyprus too
often. Bruno Barrett also joins us. He is a talk show host and a political activist. And again, tell us a little bit. You were with the Illinois Citizens Coalition. You wanted a state constitution.
Right.
The state of Illinois, but it went down to defeat. So what are you going to do next?
We've got plans on the table. Number one, it could come back in 2 years, depending on what happens with the lawsuit based on the ballot language. And even if that doesn't happen, we've got the guy who I wrote the book with and founded Illinois Citizens Coalition. We're working on another book and along with possibly some kind of dynamic action involving a ballot initiative. And the one thing you can't have a ballot initiative here in Illinois. So we're working on quite a few things.
And you are your website is extremewisdom.com.
Correct.
Extremewisdom.com. Also joining us is our special guest, Sam Skinner, former White House Chief of Staff to George Herbert Walker Bush in 1991 and 1992. Prior to that, from 1989 to 1991, he was the Secretary of the Department of Transportation. And of all of the issues that you dealt with when you were at DOT, what was the one that gave you the most sleepless nights?
It was clearly right before I became secretary, but after I was nominated, we had the bombing in Lockerbie, Scotland, Pan Am 103. And that was the beginning. What we saw was a run of terrorist activities all over the world, which continues to this day. So, you know, doing something about that and protecting the traveler to and from the United States on international travel, and then protecting the United States on domestic travel. Much after we did after 9/11 was the most crucial issue, and that still is an issue that we face as a nation, and that's why we're trying to take on the terrorists in their home territory in Afghanistan, and did take them on in Iraq, and it's still a major issue out there, Bruce.
For those people who are regular listeners to talk radio programs, not just this one, but talk radio. I'm sure that you listen to talk radio periodically, and those people who are either pontificating from the moderator's microphone or people who are calling in, they frequently criticize government, whether they're Republicans, Democrats, right. Liberals, or conservatives. As someone who has been inside, I mean, as high up inside certainly as anyone who's ever been a guest on this show, what is the thing that the average American doesn't know about government and the power of it and the trials and the tribulations and the struggles of those people who are in positions of making life or death decisions over a couple of hundred million people?
Well, first of all, there people don't sometimes recognize there's a lot of very, very qualified people who want to serve in government and do serve in government. And they are well-meaning, very thoughtful, very intelligent government servants. And they become just as frustrated as the caller does about how slow it takes for government to react and how hard it is to get government to react and how a big bureaucracy becomes lethargic in the way it makes decisions. And so there's a frustration level within government similar to what you hear as you're going down the roads and listening to XM Radio or Sirius XM now, I guess, or WLS or any place else.
Giorgio Logothetis, one of the things that you have been chomping at the bit to talk about is one of the big buzz stories over the last 72 hours originating out of Chicago, which is now mm-hmm. the political capital of America,
yeah.
and that is the fact that Hillary Clinton did meet with Barack Obama, and there's widespread speculation that she is going to be selected to be Secretary of State. Your reaction?
Well, I think that there's a big difference between her being asked and Hillary Clinton accepting that type of position. She's sitting in the catbird seat right now. She has, you know, a very delicate position of power where she obviously is being courted from all sides. She can choose to either, you know, take Obama's hand in the administration and help out in that way in one of the most kind of challenging times in our country, or there's great promise for her in the Senate, and a lot of the buzz has been about eventually seeing her ascend to the majority leader seat. And obviously there's been great dissatisfaction with Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid for one reason or another. I know progressive groups are dissatisfied with him in terms of the strategy that he took on certain issues. But, you know, on a more practical matter, he's up for reelection. And whenever you have a majority leader up in reelection that, you know, looks to be a close race, the question is whether or not they're in the best position to take hold of a progressive agenda when they're in a close competition like that. So I think Senator Clinton has a wide array of options available to her. Will she take that position if it's offered to her? I'm not sure. I do think that she sees...
What would it say to the world if one of the first overtures that Barack Obama made was rejected by Hillary Clinton?
Well, I do think that...
See, because I think I can't believe that she got on a plane, and I can't believe that picture that of the two of them together would have ever been taken if the deal has not already been cut.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
Probably. My whole, you know, not being necessarily looking at all the insides of all the different things that are going on, my first reaction would be you keep your friends close and your enemies closer. If Barack Obama stumbles badly or if the situation is so bad that he can't, you know, fix things or make some bad decisions, I think Hillary would be one of the first people to jump in and say, I told you so. But if she's a member of the administration, she might not do that. Let's face it. They're both highly qualified people for their party. And Hillary Clinton would be, probably a good choice to be Secretary of State. I think she's well-respected around the world, and she is Bill Clinton's wife.
But again, the expectation is already it's rising. It was the topic of all the Sunday morning shows, and the Hillary Clinton supporters that might have been certainly, you know, crushed that she didn't get the nomination, crushed that she wasn't even asked to be vice president. I mean, this couldn't be a phony ask in a photo op, can it,
no,
Sam?
Wouldn't that be the worst? No,
I
can't believe that she came to Chicago unless she was seriously interested in the job. I think she is now, after losing the nomination barely, and seeing that Barack Obama has been elected president, and she has now come to grips with what is she going to do next. And as a member of the United States Senate, she's very well respected, and she's a hard worker, and she's done a good job, and she got reelected in New York with a high percentage. However, the Senate operates on seniority. And there's a number of people that are ahead of her. Charles Schumer, who's the senior senator from the state of New York. Richard Durbin, a close friend of Senator Obama, who is the number two man in the United States Senate. There's a number of others. So she made a request that she be head of a special committee on health care to reform health care, trying to give her some relevance on an issue that's important to her. And that was rejected because Senator Kennedy, who's ill right now, wants to maintain that jurisdiction with his own committee.
And so, Max Baucus has got his eye on that topic as well.
So I think she has come to the conclusion that it will be much harder than she thought to be a real mover and shaker and a leader in the United States Senate for a while. Eventually she should get there. She could get there. I think Senator Obama, when looking at the candidates for Secretary of State, started thinking outside the box a little bit and started thinking about Hillary Clinton. She obviously has traveled all over the world with her husband. Number two, she's a hard worker. There's a very demoralized Department of State right now, and maybe she could turn it around. Obviously, we'd have the unique situation where the former president is her spouse and has relationships all over the world, and if we could channel them together, maybe that would be a positive. I think it's a very intriguing and interesting and complicated decision. But I can't see her turning it down if it's offered. I think that she probably said, if I don't get it, at least it shows that I'm relevant and well thought of. And there's no real negative to her by being turned down as much as I think it would have a ripple effect. Going this
isn't the really serious issue here? It's the serious issue that I think turned a lot of Democrats against Hillary Clinton and towards Barack Obama. And that is they don't want Bill Clinton back. And even though she is Secretary of State, she will get less coverage than if she was the president. I mean, you have the issue of that he is a globetrotting. He is beloved in many parts of the world. And yet there's the issue of the Clinton Library. There is the issue of the foreign support for that library. Those records have been, you know, kept secret. And I'm wondering, given the new higher ethical standards that the Obama campaign has really touted, I'm wondering whether she can pass the ethical test with Bill Clinton and all the potential dirty laundry that he has that we would all love to know about.
Well, I doubt that he would make the offer to her without engaging in that kind of cost-benefit analysis. I mean, yes, obviously the Clintons bring all their quote-unquote baggage with them. But on the flip side, as you pointed out, I mean, having a former president be the right hand of your Secretary of State and the Secretary of State, who herself has, you know, trotted the globe and has established international relationships, that's a huge plus going into this kind of new era of change that Barack Obama is heralding. And having that kind of leg up, I think, may be something where he says, I may be willing to take the risk on the other side of the equation.
I got to chuckle a little bit here. I mean, this could turn out to be a successful presidency. And like I said, they're very talented people. But let's not make any mistake here. I mean, Barack Obama is tapping the Clinton brain trust. He's smart in doing so because they actually know a few things. So this whole progressive idea about ushering in this new era of beautiful progressivism, this is Clinton's third term. And Rahm Emanuel, I mean, this is Bill Clinton's third
term.
Well,
but I would describe it as maybe another era of practical politics and pragmatism.
Sure.
Because I think, a lot of conservatives won't believe it, but I think, Barack Obama is a pragmatist more than anything else. I think a lot of liberals, I think you're going to be upset with him maybe sooner than later when you come back on this program, Georgia. I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago.
Today, let's talk about the good things, about where you can find them. Like when you go into a store and you want the best, what do? You ask the clerk what he's got in the back. And if he likes you, he says he'll be right back. Shoes, cigars, even the butcher. The best stuff is always in the back. So, when it comes to getting what's best for your Buick, Pontiac, or GMC, head to your participating dealer right now and drive around back down their Good Wrench service lane for Good Wrench and Go Time. For a limited time, you can get an oil change, tire rotation, and a Good Wrench multi-point vehicle inspection all in one package. With fuel prices the way they are, taking proper care of your vehicle can help you spend less time pumping and more time driving.
I can't stop thinking about it.
So, between now and November 30th, give it a go and make it Good Wrench and Go at your participating Buick, Pontiac, or GMC dealer. One way to know if Good Wrench and Go is right for you, visit GoodWrench.com and click on your GM brand.
Bruce Dumont back, continuing from Chicago. Sam Skinner, during the break, we were talking about Hillary Clinton still has a substantial campaign debt to get rid of, and she'd really be trapped in paying off that debt if she took the Secretary of State's job.
Actually, you brought it up, but I just commented that once you become a candidate for a nomination for the executive branch, you'd have to stop all fundraising. You really just got to put a brake on everything you're doing because it's a much different job in the executive branch with much different requirements.
And Bill would have to do it too?
Oh, yes. And so both of them would have to stop raising any kind of money, and they'd have
the vow of poverty.
Yeah. Well, you'd have to not
and chastity.
It's not going to be a vow of poverty.
Forget that.
But I'm not going there. But the poverty they don't have to worry about. But the point is that they would have to change. As a candidate for re-election to the Senate, she can go out and raise money all the time. As the United States Secretary of State, that's a non-political job. By that, I mean you can have no political activity in the State Department, the Treasury Department, the Defense Department, or the Attorney General's Office. That's one of four positions. No political activity whatsoever. No campaigning, no fundraising, no going to Democratic events. So it would change the way they would do business. And my guess is her husband would have to do the same thing. He'd have to change his whole – President Clinton would have to change the whole way he does – he operates and what he does with his life.
Bottom line, everybody's answer. Does she take it or not?
Take it if it's offered, but I don't know that it'll be offered. I think they both all may come to the conclusion that while it's a great idea, too complicated.
Bruno, yes or no?
If it's offered, she'll take it. It'll probably be a good decision.
Georgia?
I agree. I don't think that it will be offered formally or that she'd accept.
Tomorrow, John McCain comes to Chicago to meet with the Brain Trust, to meet with Barack Obama. This is called the brain center of the Obama campaign now, or the presidency-elect. John McCain, should he participate in this transition to Barack Obama? And should he accept some role if offered?
Yeah, why not? Look, the nation right now, despite Rush Limbaugh's exhortations to keep fighting no matter what, the nation right now is not looking for, gotcha political moments. It seems to be John McCain's nature that he would. So I don't know exactly which article specifically you're referring to as far as John McCain coming here, but it's only for his own benefit to actually assist in making Obama have good decisions.
Georgia, what about it?
I'm not entirely clear as to what John McCain has to offer to the transition team, but from just a purely political perspective, this is a great boon for Obama because it's just one more example of his philosophy of, the team of rivals approach to governing. You know, he's reached out to Hillary Clinton, now he's reaching out to Senator John McCain, and at the very least, seeking out their advice, their counsel, to see what they think of the situation. It certainly, at least facially, validates his philosophy that he was, that he had on the campaign trail.
He certainly could do something in the area of veterans affairs, could he not?
On that regard, yeah. On that regard,
wouldn't he be more valuable in the Senate, where he is? I mean, he is. That's where he is. He is the Republican lion of the Senate.
Yeah, I certainly do think that John McCain would be far more effective in the Senate. The question, though, is how much power would he have in the Senate after this kind of bruising campaign where there was a lot of bad blood both sides of the aisle? Things that were said, actions were taken. I know a lot of Republicans were upset with him, a lot of Democrats, obviously. I do think if he sees an opportunity open up in the Obama administration, I think that John McCain would take it. It would fit in with his quote-unquote maverick streak.
The Democratic caucus is going to be meeting next week to decide the chairmanship and the future of Joe Lieberman.
Yes.
If you were a United States Senate senator, would you forgive and forget, or would you lop his chairmanship?
I would show Senator Lieberman the door, and I would do it for two reasons.
Totally.
Putting him
out of the caucus.
Well, no. I mean, the caucus, if he wants to sit in, absolutely let him. I mean, he's going to be frozen out of so many things anyway. If he wants the caucus, fine. He's ineffective in that regard. But in terms of retaining his chairmanship, this is a quote-unquote independent Democrat that actively campaigned against the Democratic nominee, that campaigned against the Democratic agenda, and it wasn't just on the war. There's a lot of Democrats that say, well, he's just not with us on the war. He was, slashing against every single Democratic proposal. But leaving all of that political stuff aside, as a most fundamental matter, Senator Joel Lieberman is a horrible, ineffectual committee chair. He was supposed to hold hearings on Katrina, on what happened, on how the government could do a more effective response. He promised that in the campaign. He didn't hold a single hearing. Putting aside the politics, he just is horrible at that job.
Do you think he gets lopped off, Sam Skinner?
Well, I'd kick the can down the road a little bit because we've got two Senate races that aren't resolved yet. We've got the Senate race in Georgia. Well, three, actually. We've got Alaska, which looks like it's going Democratic. That'll give him one more vote. Minnesota could go either way, 210 votes difference there. And Georgia is going to have a reelection in early December, maybe December 1. So if they get to 59 or 60 votes and they need Lieberman for the 60 votes for closure, he's in a much better position to be chairman of the committee than if they think they don't need him. And so I think his bargaining power goes up. And I wouldn't give that away if I was the Democratic caucus until I saw how those seats were going to roll out.
Quick response from you, Bruno.
You know, it's sad that it comes down to all this political infighting. I like Lieberman on some issues. I don't like him on other issues. But I know Mitch McConnell would be happy to have him switch if he wanted to. So I think Sam's right. There's a leverage there.
Yeah, he's got to buy a little more time. On that note, I want to say thanks to our guest. Our conservative has been Bruno Barron. Bruno, thank you very much. Our liberal, Georgia Logothetis. Give us your blogger name.
Oh, Georgia10 at DailyCost.com.
Georgia10 at DailyCost.com. We thank you very much for being with us. And again, special guest, former White House Chief of Staff and Head Secretary of the Department of Transportation, longtime friend Sam Skinner. Sam, nice to have you with us. Hope you can do the show more often as we roll on. Beyond the Beltway is a GNAB production produced in association with WLS Talk Radio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, and Larry Kahn. Our thanks this evening, special thanks to Scott Clifton for all his assistance in preparing our new studios here in Chicago, along with Fritz Goldman, the television director of our program, and, of course, our long stalwart, over 17 years working together, Tom Veracruz and Patrick Johnson. They helped make this program possible as well. Until next week at the same time. At our new location, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Since OnStar began, we've answered over 100 million calls for help.
OnStar emergency, if something hit my car, so I'm near the cemetery.
Please, I'm going to contact the 911 center.
911.
This is OnStar emergency calling. I have a vehicle accident with airbag deployment at Kane Avenue.
Do you know if anyone in the other car is hurt?
I don't think there's another car involved. Something hit my car on the left-hand side.
And you didn't see a thing?
I didn't. I was driving along, and all of a sudden, something hit me. It was like a boulder. I don't want to get out of the car alone.
I understand. There's an officer en route to you now.
Okay. This is the first time I've used OnStar. How did you know something happened?
When your airbags were deployed, it sent a signal to my computer.
I see. Oh, here comes a nice car behind me with flashing lights.
Okay, we are here when you need us.
Built-in automatic crash response is standard for the first year on 14 Chevy models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
Imagine this. You walk into your apartment and, oh boy, you've been robbed. Somebody definitely broke in there and made off with the goods, didn't they? Your flat-screen TV, your laptop, and even your race car-shaped bed's gone. Just a devastating loss. The good news is, if you call GEICO, you could be protected for as little as $12 a month. Yeah, seriously, just $12. So first, call GEICO, and second, maybe think about buying a grown-up bed, yeah?
For a fast, easy rate quote on renter's insurance, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
Do you suffer from cold sores? Relieve One Day Cold Sore Symptom Treatment is out to prove how fast it really works. If you suffer from those nasty sores, try Relieve and find out for yourself if Relieve works really fast for you. Relieve is spelled R-E-L-E-E-V. It's easy to find and is in all major drugstores. So if you get cold sores, remember to get Relieve now and keep it ready to use the moment a cold sore attacks.
Healthy lips should never go naked. So what are you going to wear? How about ChapStick 100% Naturals? It's the all-natural way to keep lips feeling healthy. And it slides on so comfortably smooth. Or why not try on new ChapStick True Shimmer? It's the only ChapStick with shimmering highlights to give lips a beautiful, radiant shine every time you put it on. So if you want lips to look and feel healthy, never let your lips go naked. Always wear ChapStick.
Believe me, I'm a guy who likes to get his money's worth. That's why I'm gaga over Clear Eyes for Dry Eyes. I get my money's worth because Clear Eyes for Dry Eyes gives me relief that lasts. Why does it last so long? Because it stays in your eyes, that's why. The soothing moisturizers in Clear Eyes for Dry Eyes are specially formulated to stay put. For lasting relief, get Clear Eyes for Dry Eyes, the no-drip drops. Use as directed.